Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. Satchmo here, rolling at you on a from Michigan State sports until the last couple weeks. Very bizarre. Draymond Green, Jermaine Edmondson getting into a fracas. And the weird response to it from Edmondson and the athletic department. The whole thing is bizarre. So we're going to be talking about that. I'm going to be talking about this year's college football season here on Sparty Talk, your podcast for all things Michigan State sports. I'm talking about what to expect from the college football season, the latest college football news, latest on the college basketball team, and other stuff going on in the world of sports, pop culture, news at large, the usual hodgepodge and panoply of things that we cover. Joining me to talk about that is the one, the only, the thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, and a happy summer to you, hopefully, out there, Spartan Nation.
Yeah, happy summer, everyone. DB, the end of July, beginning of August, sort of a weird time. It starts to get a little depressing because the end of summer is nigh. It's like all the good stuff has been soaked out. And now we're getting towards the end of summer, but the only thing we have left to do, but what rescues it and what makes this end of summer great and tolerable, is football season is just around the corner.
That is exactly right, Satchmo. I actually enjoy these days leading up to the football season because we can sit and be what we like to be, armchair quarterbacks about everything, and it's great.
Yeah, armchair quarterback, lazy boy quarterback, recliner quarterback. Perhaps, DB, the single greatest invention in furniture is the recliner.
It's great for watching football.
It is. It is. You throw me in a recliner, an air-conditioned room, and turn off the lights, boom, I'm out. Now, before we get into the football team, you know those movie theaters in Courthouse?
Yeah.
They renovated them a few years back, and they put in the recliners. And so they're huge, comfortable leather chairs that recline, and they recline a long way. They can handle a tall person like me. And let me tell you what, the movie's got to be really good. Because if the movie isn't good, I'm gone. It's like, how I'm snoring my way through 2.5 hours. So the movie's got to be really good. Otherwise, I'm gone.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those things where you have to elbow me to wake me up during the good parts.
and in other news, Satchmo soon will be getting his AARP card.
Hey, now.
I've
put the Pokemon Go app on my phone. I'm with it.
Oh, you have? Now, wait a minute. Before we get into the events of the day, have you wandered around your local jurisdiction trying to do all these things, and have you gone into dangerous areas?
I haven't gone into dangerous areas. So here's the problem. Where I'm located right now, I just got the app, and where I'm located right now, there aren't that many Pokemon to capture or do anything. So I got the one charity Pokemon that you can capture when you launch it, but I'm still waiting for the official launch where I'm at. However, I will be stateside beginning of August, traveling through Chicago and Detroit and Washington and all of that sort of stuff. And so I'll be back stateside, and I intend to capture lots of Pokemon while doing that.
Well, good.
Yes.
Don't go to any crack houses or anything.
No. Nothing like that. But I'm looking forward to the Pokemon of Comerica Park picture. Stay tuned for that.
Oh boy. That sounds
interesting. Yes, I will be taking, because I have no doubt that there are Pokemon at Comerica Park. And hopefully I can get a picture of a Pokemon on the field at Comerica Park. That's what I'm shooting for.
So are you going to be attending your first Tigers game at Comerica Park?
That is correct. I have not been to a Tigers game at Comerica Park.
That's right. That's outstanding. Well, do you know who you're going to be seeing, or is this going to be a spur-of-the-moment trip?
I believe the Mets might be in town.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fitting for you.
Yeah, I believe. I'm not 100% positive, but the Mets might be in town. And I honestly, if the Mets are in town, I don't know whether to boo them or cheer them. The Mets being the woebegone team of my youth. But enough about that.
If you wanted to, just real quick, if you wanted to do it, you could sing the New York Mets theme song like the drunk Don Draper did in season 7 of Mad Men.
See, because I am a Tigers fan. I follow the Tigers. Most of my friends are Tigers fans. So I do have an affinity for the Tigers. And I would argue that my affinity for the Tigers at this point is greater than my affinity for the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where, you know, it could be like the Mickelson-Henrik-Stenson shootout at Troon. You just sit back and enjoy the show. But it's the Mets and the Tigers, so you can't really enjoy the show. It's one of those things. And there's a good chance between now and when I watch the game that half the team on both sides won't be there because they both decided to trade away half the team.
Yes.
So that's a distinct possibility. So, but yes, so I'm not completely in the get off my lawn phase of life yet. but Draymond Green might be.
Oh,
I know. It's a terrible place to start.
Boy.
I think I feel like it's the only place we can start the podcast. Draymond Green slapped the Spartan so hard, he slapped him out of Michigan State. honestly, we don't know whether Draymond Green slapped anyone. Jermaine Edmondson, he wasn't a former cornerback at the time of the incident, but he is now a former cornerback for Michigan State. And, you know, been around for a while, right? 4 years, I think. But former quarterback for Michigan State apparently got into some sort of verbal beef with Draymond Green over the weekend. I think it was at Rick's. And then they met up. Let me get the restaurant name right, because they met up at another restaurant afterwards the following night. Oh, because we got to give them pub, right?
Yeah, we want to get this accurate, of course.
Yeah, well, we got to get this accurate, right? What's the name of this restaurant?
It wasn't the Brute Pub. They used to be Dooley's, was it?
No. It wasn't Dooley's. Oh, you see, this is what I get for dealing with non-local. Non-local news reports, but anyway, I'll pull up the name of this restaurant. So they meet at the restaurant the following day, and more beef ensues. And from Jermaine Edmondson's point of view, you know, he said in his complaint that, you know, he complained to Green poked Edmondson in the shoulder. Oh, Conrad's Grill. Have you ever eaten at Conrad's Grill?
Nope, never.
Never, me neither. So
must
Conrad's
be one of those
Grill.
New places. Must be one of those new places.
Yeah, or it could be just everything in East Lansing is new to us because we don't get back there often enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing it's close to Rick's.
Yeah.
But who knows? And so they met up at Conrad Grill the following night, a restaurant a few hundred feet away. And the Rick's, I think, is just speculation, because I don't think the bar that they had the thing in was identified. But I just assume everything happens at Rick's. Anything that, you know, anything good that happens happened at the old Dooley's in Sensation, which I guess are closed down or something like that. Anything bad that happens, happens at Rick's. I love Rick's.
And, oh, yeah. Rick's is a hole in the wall, but it's our hole in the wall. It's an East Lansing.
It's our hole in the wall. Yeah. And so went to Conrad Grill, and apparently, according to Edmondson, Green poked him in the shoulder. The prior night, Green said something to the effect of, you know, he was paying for scholarships like yours, although he used some language that I won't repeat. And Edmondson alleged that there was some choking involved, where a member of Green's party choked Edmondson, and a member of Green's party choked Edmondson's girlfriend. And then Edmondson decided to stand up to Green the following night and said last night wasn't cool. And then he says Green poked Edmondson in the shoulder, and Edmondson said he didn't need to lay a hand on him, and then Green punched him. Of course, Green denies punching. More importantly, Benny Fowler, who apparently witnessed this whole thing, former Michigan State football player, former wide receiver, now playing for the Denver Broncos. Didn't he catch like the 2-point conversion in the Super Bowl, DB?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So Peyton Manning's last pass or something like that.
Right, that's true.
Says that Draymond Green didn't hit anybody. Everyone needs to relax. The truth will come out.
Yeah.
So all of that happens. And then we get the announcement that Jermaine Edmondson has decided to transfer from the program. This coming just a couple days, like a day or 2 days after the whole Draymond Green incident. And the press release, DB, was, how shall we say, suspicious.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
I think so. It is very strange.
It was very strange. And so the press release comes out and says, well, we've been discussing this for a while. And after discussions, after spring practice and recent discussions, Jermaine Edmondson decided it's in his best interest to transfer out of the program.
Yeah.
Now, it could be true, DB. Because Edmondson was going to be a senior, and he's been jumped on the depth chart, and there was no guarantee that he was going to get the type of playing time he would want to get as a senior. And so it could be true that he was interested in transfer.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to rule that out. However, Draymond Green is the face of Michigan State sports right now.
Yeah.
If you're going to get into a beef with someone, you don't want to get into a beef with the face of Michigan State sports, because then you get into like sort of what's a civil war. Like, all right, you've got the football program saying, wait a minute, why is a basketball guy from the basketball program attacking one of our players? And do you support the football player knowing that Draymond Green is not only the face of the athletic department, he's the face of the Michigan State basketball program, he's their top recruiter, he's the reason why people want to come to school there. And you can't say, yeah, Draymond Green's a liar, look at this. And so who do you end up supporting? And so it seems to me that this transfer is just a convenient way to end like a what could be a real intramural squabble that could tear the athletic department apart. So instead they're like, why don't you go ahead and leave? Now, we don't know if that's the case, Stevie, but this just smells really bad. And it's even worse if Jermaine Edmondson's side is exactly what happened.
Right.
What do you make?
The whole thing is bizarre. It's bizarre. Yeah. There's so many holes in the story. And look, let's let's break this down into two things. First of all, what is Draymond Green? All right. So I know athletes come back to hang around East Lansing, but what was he doing there in the middle of the summer, hanging out in East Lansing? And how did these two guys cross paths? Like it just seems like I'm having trouble understanding.
Well,
there's too many holes
here. So I heard, completely unverified, but sure, let's go with it. Why not? I heard that he was back in town for a wedding of some sort.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough. It's not like he came to East Lansing looking for trouble. And frankly, Draymond Green wants to come back to East Lansing as an alum, just like you and I want to come back to an alum. That's his perfect right?
I guess, yes.
So I don't have a problem with him coming back. Now, there's the theory that many people espouse, that nothing good ever happens at 2:30 in the morning, so you shouldn't be out at 2:30. Right?
Yes. Ron Mason was the person who said that to a friend of ours. Yes.
Yes.
The late, great Ron Mason. Yes.
The late, great Ron Mason. This was one of his things. And this is one of the things he told the players, he told the media, he told anyone that would listen. Nothing good ever happens at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And Herm Edwards takes it even further. Nothing good happens after midnight.
Yeah.
If you see the clock says midnight, you should be home and in bed.
Yeah.
All right. D.V., you and I have been out past midnight many an hour.
Yeah.
Many a time. Even recently, we've been out past midnight. So we know things, we know life happens after midnight.
Yes.
We're not objecting to life happening after midnight. The thing that I think is really important, though, is if you are somebody like Draymond Green, you have to understand that you're a target.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether you're in theoretically safe territory like East Lansing, or you're wandering to Chicago, or you're back home in Oakland, wherever you are a target. And so that means you have to surround yourself with people. If you happen to be out with friends, you have to surround yourself with people who can prevent bad things from happening. Because I think at this point, I think it's easy for us to say nothing good happens at 2:30 in the morning. Why are you being out? Without understanding that he's in his early 20s. He's not going to stay home and get tucked into bed by midnight every night. That's perfectly fine for Peyton Manning to be in bed. He's 40 years old. But it's not realistic for Draymond Green to be in bed. That said, I think it is realistic for him to surround himself with people who make sure that this type of thing doesn't happen.
Correct.
And I think that's very important. And I think that's an underrated aspect of posse. Normally, we bemoan the athletic posse. And I'm not a big fan of the athletic posse, the hanger-ons that just sort of leech off the athletes that they're friends with. However, I think it does make sense to keep one or two people close to you that you can go out with late at night, relax, and these people will make sure that your name doesn't enter into the headline.
All right.
Out of curiosity, gut feeling, who do you believe, Benny Fowler or Jermaine Edmondson?
You mean Draymond Green?
Draymond Green hasn't said that much, right?
Yeah.
So we have Fowler's version of events, no punch. We have Jermaine Edmondson said choking the night before, followed by punch the next day.
Well, this is an interesting thing. Really not sure who to believe here, Satchmo. I think it's somewhere in between. I mean, I think something did happen. I think maybe it was more of a verbal undressing by Green to Edmonton, and Edmonton took it a little further. Maybe there was a strike or a slap or a hit or whatever it was. The choking, maybe somebody did choke him, but maybe it was not Green. Maybe it was somebody else in Green's party. I have no idea. I'm really not sure that I buy the choking part. But I will say this. Draymond Green, Satchmo, has some anger issues. And we were seeing them come out during the NBA playoffs with some of the things that he was doing on the court. And so I actually started to wonder for 2 seconds, is Edmonton from Ohio? Is he a Cavaliers fan who talked smack to Draymond Green?
You want to know what? That's a good point. I could see that. I could see that.
I don't know where Edmonton's from. That's what I was trying to figure out. I don't know where he's from.
Let me see.
Yeah, because if he's a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, I wonder if that precipitated some of this.
It could be.
Yeah. Because guys will talk smack to each other.
Yeah.
Maybe he had some words, or maybe Edmonton really likes LeBron James and had some words for Green about it, and then he deserved to lose or whatever it was. And Draymond Green, Satchmo, as you mentioned, is still a young guy. He's only 4 years removed from college. And maybe didn't take too kindly to that. And who's this punk Spartan player? He didn't care that he goes to Michigan State. Who's this punk Spartan player saying, talking smack to him about stuff that he doesn't know anything about?
Yeah, I could completely see that. It's a really weird situation. He's got an Ohio-based attorney, so I'm guessing he's from Ohio.
So there you go. So now I'm starting to realize that that was my first instinct when I heard the story, that that's the kind of thing that would set Draymond Green off. And he probably still is unhappy with that loss. Now, Draymond Green has to handle himself better. There's no doubt about that. He's a mature guy, or has to be a mature guy. Tom Izzo even told him during the playoffs, you know, when a couple of these incidents happened on the court in the conference finals, that he needed to contain his anger and control himself a little bit on the court and channel himself in a way that was aggressive but not physically aggressive and violent on the court. And so, and it was uncharacteristic of Green, Satchmo, because when he played for the Spartans, he was very passionate. But I don't remember these kind of incidents when he played basketball for the Spartans.
No, he doesn't. I'm not sure he has an anger issue. I think he might have a hyper competitive issue. I don't necessarily think he's an anger issue, although there was an issue of him really yelling and screaming at people in the Golden State locker room earlier this year. So, I mean, he's hyper competitive, and sometimes I think he lets that competitive nature get the best of him, but I'm not necessarily sure he's got a serious anger issue. But Edmonton's from Canton, Ohio, and he's retained the law office of Corey Minor Smith. And so who released a statement on behalf of it. It didn't identify Edmonton by name. But here's what the statement said. My client is fully cooperating with the authorities investigating this unfortunate situation. We look forward to a full and thorough investigation into the real facts coming to light. My client is a student athlete who was punched and assaulted by Mr. Green in an unprovoked, unnecessary attack. His life's been forever altered by the events of that weekend. As the authorities continue investigating and interviewing all witnesses, we will allow further public comment until that process is completed.
All right. So a few things about that. Attorneys, of course, as you know, like to play it up a little bit. His life is forever altered. I don't know about that. Yeah, it was a bad incident. Yeah, he probably hates Draymond Green, but I think Jermaine Edmondson will move on with his life. Okay. Did Green strike him? It's a strong possibility that that happened, maybe not to the degree. Did Edmondson provoke this, though? That part is not in there, and I wonder.
Yeah, so look, the way police reports work, especially when you have a filing complainant, is you get one side of the story. You don't get both sides of the story. And so we clearly don't have Draymond Green's side of the story. And I think you're right. The truth lies somewhere in between. Something happened. We don't know what happened yet. But something happened. We don't know what happened yet. And until we know what happened, you know, bloviators like us can speculate, but it's hard to reach any conclusion. I agree. I think something happened. We don't know what it is. This is, if we were playing the PTI game, something or nothing, this wouldn't be nothing. This wouldn't be something, but there's a little something.
Now, you have some pretty strong opinions on this, Satchmo, about Michigan State's athletic department's handling of the situation, and so I'm curious to know your feelings about what went on and what could have been done better.
Yeah, so this is a really bizarre situation, right? Because Michigan State came out and essentially said in a press release that Jermaine Edmonds is transferring and didn't refer at all to what happened over the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? And then when pressed for comment, hold on a sec. I got to pull this release up. My Wi-Fi is acting up on me here.
Yeah.
Making
I'll talk for a second while you're doing that. I sort of feel like, you know, if Jermaine Edmondson suddenly just said I quit the team based off this incident, that really is not a bad reflection on Michigan State. I mean, an incident happened, so why not just be forthcoming about it and say, Jermaine Edmondson's upset about this incident. We tried to talk to him. He's not having it. And so he's leaving the program. And that's that.
Yeah.
I don't see where that would be such, if that's true, I don't see where that's such a bad thing to say. But you have some thoughts about how that could be damaging between the basketball and football program.
Yeah, because basically what it's trying to say is, I mean, look, if he left directly as a result of what happened with this Draymond Green thing, basically the athletic department is meaning, you want to know what? Something happened. But Draymond Green is our paycheck. And so we're taking his side and not the side of a college kid that has no power. That's basically what that means. And that's a really tough place to be in. You want to be the guy that says, I mean, you want to be the coach that stands up for your kids. I mean, if Jermaine Edmondson's done nothing wrong, why should he be run out of the program?
Yeah. Well, then for the Spartan program to turn around and say this was in the works for months, that just looks weird.
That looks weird. To have a release that comes out and doesn't refer to it, refer to the departure, is tone deaf at best, right? And we know the Michigan State Athletic Department is smarter than that, right? And then you have the football team saying his release was not directly related to Edmund's altercation. Not directly related. What does that mean? That means it was indirectly related. Right? That means it played a role.
Right.
It makes zero sense. But when in the statement that was released, it says, in discussions with Jermaine Edmondson following spring practice and the weeks thereafter, it became clear that Jermaine wanted to play a larger role on the team. After consulting with him in the summer, he felt it was in his best interest to finish his playing career elsewhere. We granted his immediate release to transfer to another institution to have that opportunity. That was the initial release, Steve. The initial release was Jermaine was unhappy being a Michigan State Spartan. He wanted a bigger role on the team. And that's why he's transferring. And then when pressed by the media, they're like, well, it wasn't directly related to that. Right? So basically they're saying, yeah, he left in part because of his Draymond Green thing. And so that makes you wonder, what if Jermaine Edmondson didn't really do anything wrong? What if in this situation, in the balance of the facts, Draymond Green was more wrong than Jermaine Edmondson?
Yeah.
Did the Michigan State run this kid out because they wanted to protect their paycheck? This is the stuff that sort of bothers me, right?
Yeah, it is bothersome.
It's bothersome. Did they run a potentially – look, I'm not saying Jermaine Edmondson's innocent. And we're all big boys here, right? We understand the politics that are involved in this. Draymond Green's going to be a guy that's donating millions and millions of dollars to the Michigan State Athletic Department over the course of the next few years. And it's entirely possible – that Draymond Green is really not at fault here. It's also entirely possible that Draymond Green bears some responsibility in this. It's also entirely possible that Draymond Green might bear the bulk of the responsibility in this. But if either one of those situations is true, and Michigan State ran this kid out of town because of this incident, what is our athletic department doing? And trying to pretend that this incident had nothing to do with it and the initial press release is tone deaf at bad, DB. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm not standing up here defending Jermaine Edmondson, but I have real concerns about how this was handled by our athletic department.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's a shame. It also could really hurt the perception of the football program. I mean, you know, here all this stuff has been done by Mark D'Antonio, and it's an unfortunate incident, and it's just unlucky that it happened. There was nothing that, you know, it was the perfect storm of a bad situation. It's awkward, it's weird, you know, that two Spartans, one who's still playing on a team, and then a great Spartan who, you know, is making his name in the NBA, crossed path in the middle of the summer, no less, into a skirmish. Something happened, obviously. And then, so that happens. But I don't know. I mean, Satchel, if you're a football recruit looking at Michigan State from this, is this going to weigh on you a little bit?
Well, can you imagine what, like, Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh are going to do with this? They're like, why do you want to go to a basketball school? You wanted to Draymond Green on a bad night and you get kicked out of camp?
Yeah, they're going to have a field day with this.
Yeah. I mean, this is really problematic. On the other hand, you know, running him out solves some issues, right? It solves basically a civil war from opening up, because Jermaine Edmondson's going to expect his teammates to back him up, right? And his football teammates to back him up. And Draymond Green's going to expect the basketball program and all the players that are at Michigan State right now to back him up, because he's a former MSU basketball player. And the last thing you want is players on the two teams taking sides with each other in open warfare, right?
Yeah.
Within the athletic department. So I understand why it's in the best interest of the Michigan State Athletic Department for Jermaine Edmondson to transfer. And I can even understand why, you know, it was in the best interest of Jermaine Edmondson to transfer. And so I can see why Jermaine Edmondson would want to transfer. It's like, look, he says, I've got to finish my career somewhere else. But the way Michigan State Athletic Department handled it, by not mentioning the incident, and by later saying when pressed, yeah, it's indirect, not directly related, which means it wasn't the prime reason, but it played a role, right? That's what it means,
right?
Read between the lines. That just smells bad, and it smells like they basically told Jermaine Evans, yeah, it's time for you to go now.
Yeah.
Without the facts necessarily being known. And so that's just a terrible look for the Michigan State Athletic Department.
Yeah.
I mean, terrible.
And more to this, to the actual football team itself, Edmondson was a pretty decent player who he was probably going to start next year, right? Or this season?
No, he fell in the third in the depth chart.
Okay, so he had tumbled on the depth chart. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
all right. So does that lend any credibility to what Michigan State was saying? It
does.
You know,
and
he
that's
was
why
disgruntled
I
a little
that.
Bit. And, yeah. So, okay.
The whole thing's a mess. But here's my question, DB. If this is Tyler O'Connor, what happens?
Well, you're in a real shitstorm there because then all of a sudden you're left with one quarterback with experience.
No, that's not what I'm saying. If this is Tyler O'Connor that gets into a beef with Draymond Green, right?
Yeah.
And Draymond slaps him. Or something happens. We don't know what the beef is. But let's just say there's a beef, the exact same situation we're in right now, DB.
Oh, you're saying
the
football program reacts differently than suddenly, wait a minute, you can't slap our quarterback around. Well, then you have a turf war in the university that's going to get out of control. Then Mark Hollis is going to have to calm everybody down.
Yeah, see, this one was easy
to
solve.
Mark D'Antonio is not going to – Mark D'Antonio is not going to run a starting quarterback out of town.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? That's why this smells fishy to me. Because running Edmondson out of town, now, that look, they say that they didn't run him out of town. He was talking about transfer. And it's very well likely, and it's probably very truthful, that he was considering transferring because he'd fallen down the depth chart. And they had these conversations. And he didn't play in the green and white game. At least it doesn't look like he did. And so you have all of these things. So it's entirely possible that he was considering transferring, and maybe this was the straw that broke the camel's back. But
yeah,
it feels like this led directly to the transfer. It might not have been the leading cause, but it certainly played a factor. And that's just terrible.
Yeah.
And that's a really bad look.
Yeah. The whole thing just smells bad all the way around.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Just not good at all. And it takes some of the fun on the start of football season, right? I mean, we've got an interesting football season coming up.
Yeah, and you know, this is going to get brought up again and again and again by the talking heads once the season gets going again and Michigan State gets into playing different games and, you know, if their depth somehow gets tested in the secondary, this is going to be fodder and it's going to be unfortunate because people like to pick at Michigan State. They like to find the flaws of Michigan State. And you know, my favorite person, Kirk Herbstreit, is sitting there salivating. Can't wait to discuss how this is going to be the downfall of Michigan State football right here, or some garbage like that.
Ah, good old Herbstreit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of TV broadcast.
Yes.
Lots of interesting stuff happening on the TV side of things. First of all, just from a Big Ten contract standpoint, ESPN and Fox are splitting up the Big Ten contract. What do you think about that? Are you looking forward to the Big Ten on Fox?
I'm not comfortable yet with the way Fox does college football. I'm still trying to adjust to that. I mean, I do like Gus Johnson, of course, but I haven't grown into Fox yet like I have with the other sports. But on the other hand, I'm kind of getting tired of ESPN. I just feel like they're so anti-Big Ten, and then, you know, when push comes to shove, they seem to be unfavorable to Michigan State a lot. And there's too many damn Michigan and Ohio State people on the airwaves doing college football. And so I feel like I guess part of me likes this in a way. I'm sort of in the middle of it right now. I'm kind of ambivalent. I'm not over the top, I guess. How about you? What's your thought?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So the way this is going to work, folks, is Fox and ESPN are going to take turns each week getting first pick for the Big Ten game they want. And whereas before, ESPN automatically had the first pick and the first couple of picks, right? But now Fox and ESPN will take turns in doing that. I think the tricky thing is you associate ESPN with college sports. And because you associate ESPN with college sports, you almost need to have the Big Ten on ESPN. Because if you don't have the Big Ten on ESPN, you get into this recruiting thing. And you're like, why would you want to go play for them? They're not even on ESPN.
Yeah.
And it becomes this prestige factor. So I almost think the Big Ten has to be on ESPN. But the way Delaney set these contracts up is smart, right? He extracted the most possible money he could from ESPN. He extracted the most possible money he could from and I think it's good to get some fresh blood into the broadcasting. But the key is the games have to be findable. If Fox starts relegating all of these games to their regional networks, like Fox Sports Detroit and all of this nonsense, then what's the point, right? But if they're on Fox, on the mothership, then it becomes worth it. So, I mean, are these games going to be on FS1? We just don't know. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that are just sort of up in the air about this. So we'll see. But if Fox is going to devote the time and the resources and the energy, and look, they should. They've spent all this money. And maybe Fox Sports 1 now becomes the home of college football. So this is what puts FS1 on the map. Because no one's watching it for Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I mean, come on. So people watch it for NASCAR. So it's really a niche channel, and maybe this is what broadens it out a little bit and gives it some purchase. And if so, good for Fox. But I think it's going to take a while to catch on, just like it took a while for Big Ten fans to get used to the Big Ten network. Not that you can ever get used to Jerry DiNardo, but it took a while to get used to the Big Ten network. And
I love the Jerry DiNardo cheap shot you got in there. That's excellent.
Yeah, he had a stellar record at LSU. But seriously, why do networks think that we want to listen to people who can't win, right? You know, it's one thing to listen to Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells. They know what they're doing. But seriously, I mean, we have to listen to Matt Millen and Jerry DiNardo. I mean, they're a combined 0 for life. It doesn't make sense. But just like
0 for life.
So just like we got used to the Big Ten network, we'll get used to it on Fox, I think. But I think it's important that we stayed on ESPN.
Yeah, I think it's good that they split it up. I mean, you're right. I wish ESPN would improve the broadcasting aspect of things. I mean, some of the color commentators. But that being said, it's still prestigious to be on ESPN. And I would suspect that what you'll see is Fox do like double headers, where you'll have like the Big Ten game on, say, the 3:30 game on Fox, and then they'll do the Pac-10 or Big 12 game at night or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And so I think it could be good. On the announcer front, ESPN got nailed. Mike Tirico leaving ESPN. Mike Tirico's gone to NBC.
Wow. Is that starting effective now for the Olympics?
I don't know whether Tirico is going to be at this Olympics, but he just started. He is, by everyone's understanding, the heir apparent to Al Michaels.
Well, I can see that. That makes sense. Is he going to be involved with the Sunday night studio crew?
Yeah. So he's the heir apparent to Al Michaels. We don't know what his assignments are going to be yet. When I saw the NBC announcer listing, I didn't see Mike Tirico's name anywhere on that. So he might not be doing this Olympic, but it's widely assumed that he's going to be the heir apparent to Bob Costas in that chair as well. So it looks like Mike Tirico is in line for some really good stuff at NBC. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, certainly, I mean, he's good. The big question is who takes over Monday Night Football with Gruden?
Say that? No, so Sean McDonough is taking over.
Really? Sean McDonough? Well, he's good. That's an interesting choice. I think that's actually a solid choice. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
So Dave Pasch is going to be. And Brad Nessler left ESPN for CBS.
Oh, so will Brad Nessler be calling NFL games on CBS now?
Yeah, I think he's going to be doing college football. So apparently, this is Vern Lundquist last season, and so he's going to be taking over for Vern.
Well, you know what? So he'll be reunited with Gary Danielson. I mean, that's actually a pretty good team. That's a good get for CBS.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's really good. And so I'm impressed. But you want to know what this means? Apparently, Steve Leaf is going to be calling college football games now.
Oh, God. Ugh. Steve Levy is a guy they'll never be able to get rid of.
Yeah. And so, yeah,
he's
apparently,
horrible.
Steve Levy, he was terrible hockey.
Yeah.
He was terrible, terrible. So Tirico's going to call golf for NBC, and it looks like he's going to call the Olympics too.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure what he's going to be doing at the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, that's a good get. ESPN's being drained of, which is, I guess, too bad for them, but we'll see.
Yeah. And it looks like Tirico's going to be daytime host. That just came in recently. He wasn't part of the original list of announcers for that. So, so he's going to be doing golf, football, and the Olympics. So, yeah, good move for Tirico. But Steve Levy's calling Big Ten games. I'm just putting it on mute.
Fortunately, I have Sirius XM, so I can turn on the other broadcast or George Blaha. I would much rather listen to George Blaha and Jason Strayhorn, calling it with him. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then your best buddy there, DB, Chris Spielman, is also leaving ESPN.
He is. That's huge. Where is he going to?
I think he's going to Fox to do college football. Would not be surprised to see him on college football, Big Ten games.
Wow. So Fox is really building up. So we're going to see a lot more college football on Fox rather than just one or two games.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's huge.
It's shaping up to be interesting. And let's face it, Fox rated, I mean, not just Fox, but between Tirico and Nessler leaving, those are two of their big football voices out the door.
Yeah, well, and two of their better play-by-play people as well.
Yeah, and Spielman, for as much crap that we give him, is pretty good, right? I mean, he's
Spielman
great.
Is actually, Yes, Steele is actually really good. Like, he's not in the category of a bad commentator, and I actually wonder if we'll see him on some of the NFL broadcasts too on Fox.
Yeah, we might. I think that's definitely a possibility, and I'm sure Spielman's looking at a possibility too. But he's going over primarily to do college football, just the way Brad Nessler is going to start off doing. Nessler might do the odd NFL game in a pinch, but Nessler's there for the SEC on CBS. So he'll be doing whatever games they have, whenever they have a second SEC game, that's what he's there for, and then to take over for Vern. And so, it's a different college football landscape.
Yeah, it's interesting that they have these guys moving into roles in waiting, because Al Michaels hasn't actually announced that he's retiring yet, but that must be coming fairly soon.
Yeah, Al Michaels is still going strong. I'm sure Al Michaels in his head has set his own over-under on how long he's going to last at NBC. He will somewhere late in the fourth quarter let a sly reference in about that, about the experts saying that, he's a 3-point favorite to remain for another 2 years.
Tipping off the Vegas gamblers as he always does.
Absolutely. I think that'll be. But you're right. Al Michaels hasn't announced how long he's going to be. Tirico's one of the best in the business. And it's real weird because you always looked at Tirico as an ESPN lifer, right? He started off there when he was 24 years old, and he's been there 20-plus years. He's on NBC now. And so he's going to be doing the Olympics. He's going to be doing football. He's going to be doing golf. Look at it this way. Tirico's going to get a shot at doing a Super Bowl, which is something he could never get at ESPN.
On another TV note here, real quick, I saw this headline last week, and I went, oh, really now? And I know you'd be interested in this. The College Football Playoff Committee is now considering moving those two playoff games off of New Year's Eve.
Yeah, so this is a real easy thing, right? So they came out with a lot of hubris and said, we're going to remake New Year's Eve into a national college football holiday. Really?
Because
I thought New Year's Day was the national college football holiday. So you wanted to remake New Year's Eve into the national college football holiday. You wanted to convince guys, and it's primarily guys, some women, but you wanted to convince college football fans on the one night that they plan to get dressed up and go out and drink and party, right, and make drunken New Year's babies, all right? The one night that they're going to do it, and let's face it, DB, let's face it, there are pretty much only two nights, if you're in a couple, right? There are only two nights of guaranteed sex, for the most part. It's Valentine's and New Year's Eve. And you have to do something really major if you're in a couple. You have to do something really majorly wrong not to get laid those two nights.
Yeah.
All right? And what is one of the things you could do really bad not to get laid that night? Honey, it's the college football playoffs tonight.
Right.
I can't go out to the
On Valentine's Day, you want to watch some NHL game.
Yeah, exactly. There's no guy that's going to want to screw up a sure thing, right?
Right.
So, no, it wasn't going to happen. Now, here's the funny thing, right? If it is going to happen, let's just assume that the grand poobahs of football and their infinite wisdom were actually right, and people were willing to do this. And last year, it showed they weren't, right, because the ratings were terrible. But let's just say for the sake of argument, that it's going to take 2 or 3 years for this to build up, right? Well, they can't change it for the next 2 years anyway. For them to come out now and say they're thinking about moving it off New Year's Eve is the easiest thing in the world for them to say, because if in 2 years it turns out that this New Year's Eve thing works out, hey, great. We'll keep it on New Year's Eve. This is working out better than planned. And if it doesn't work out, like, see, we tried it. We knew it didn't work. We were smart enough to be flexible and change plans mid-court. So making this announcement now does absolutely nothing.
Yeah. It's really sort of, I mean, they're totally missing the boat. I mean, to just continue to have it on New Year's Eve, when in fact, as you're saying, you have such a huge captive audience. I mean, the NHL, for example, has done very well with this Winter Classic because on New Year's Day, it's not like Christmas Day or Thanksgiving where there's, you know, always guaranteed to be a lot of family around or anything, but there's always, especially in most of the country in that day, there's a lot of people inside. They expect football. They expect, you know, something to be on TV. The NHL filled a little bit of a void at the beginning of the day on, you know, New Year's Day and started catching people's attention with that snow globe game. And now people see that game, the outdoor game on New Year's Day. And then there's the college football dropping the ball. And I said it last year, you could have a 12:30 game and then segue to the Rose Bowl because that's traditionally on New Year's Day. That can be your sort of, you know, middle of the day thing, and then have your night playoff game after that. And you've got, you'll get huge ratings.
Yeah. You're right. It makes zero sense. It makes zero sense the way they've got it set up now. And so I'm not going to give them any credit for saying we're thinking about changing it. Because it was a statement that cost them nothing.
Yeah, right.
They're locked into New Year's Eve for the next couple of years anyway. And then if it doesn't work out, go ahead.
You know, admittedly, too, the games, I mean, and the Spartans were guilty, too, as well as Oklahoma and Clemson, but the two semifinal games were really not very good anyways. Now, that aside, I think the true test will be if you end up with a really good matchup and a good game this New Year's Eve and the ratings are still down, then they ought to change course as fast as possible because it's ridiculous. And I have a feeling that's going to happen. Anyway.
I agree. Yeah, it's – yeah. So speaking of college football playoffs, Stevie, college football season is starting. Do you like Michigan State's chances as of right now to navigate their way to back-to-back college football playoff appearances?
That is a really tough question. It's kind of two-pronged. There's a two-pronged answer there, and it's a lot of what-ifs. Last year just felt like there was a strong chance, and it happened. And good for our program. We got there. This year, there's no sure thing to me about that. I still feel like this team can have a good season, but what is good this year? I don't know if this, you know, the schedule, take away the Notre Dame game on the road, the schedule sets up fairly well for the Spartans to be able to have, you know, you get your two of your toughest games at home, Michigan and Ohio State. And for that matter, you can throw in Wisconsin, who's decent. I believe they're visiting Spartan Stadium in the early part of the Big Ten season. And so make that three. And so the schedule sets up for them in a way that you could still, if they win all those games, we could be sitting here in a few months going, yeah, this is a strong possibility. But then on the other hand, I don't think anything's for sure. So at this time, if you had to take my temperature and ask me, just knowing that we have a new quarterback situation, we have some changeover on the offense a little bit, still should have good lines on both sides, but the defense lost a little bit. I'm not ready to say that the Spartans are ready for back-to-back right now. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so this could be similar to our Rose Bowl team, D.D. Where we have so many questions, and similar to our Rose Bowl team in that not in terms of record, but in terms of our Rose Bowl team was so much better at the end of the season than they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Right, because this was the year Connor Cook took over partway through the season and all of that stuff. But they were so much better at the end of the season than they were at the beginning. And so this strikes me as a distinct possibility just because there are so many question marks about this team. We've got question marks on the defensive line. We have question marks in the secondary. We have question marks on the offensive line. It looks like we have the talent there, but how quickly is it going to gel? How quickly is it going to come together? What is our depth going to look like? What sorts of injuries are we going to have? All of those sorts of things. So it could be that we look kind of shaky at the beginning of the year, and we look really good at the end of the year. And there's some tough games in between. And it could be that Notre Dame is catching us at the right time of the year where we're still figuring things out and they're able to pull out a win. Whereas Michigan and Ohio State are catching us later in the year. So we've got things figured out and we're catching them at a better time of the year.
Yeah.
And those sorts. So it's tough to say whether it doesn't feel like a college football playoff appearance is in the cards just because there are so many open question marks about it. But on the other hand, if everything gels right away, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right, so, you're correct. Yeah.
I don't think so, but I think it's not. I'm not as confident as I would have been last year about the possibilities. That's for sure. Speaking of scheduling, DB, I don't know if you noticed this, but I think Michigan has Notre Dame, Michigan State, and Ohio State all on the road this year, and then all at home the following year, and then all on the road this year. And the athletic department came out and said, the Michigan athletic department came out and said, we have to find a way to address this scheduling issue. We don't want Michigan State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State to be all on the road one year and all at home another year. Is that admitting? Is that admitting that Michigan State is a rival?
Oh my goodness! I think they'd still, in their own arrogant way, Sachin, will probably try to deny that.
But they said they can't have all three games at home or all three games on the road.
But you're right. That admission is that even just stated like that, even without saying it, is an admission that they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Thought that was interesting.
Well, the shoe is on the other foot right now in terms of the rivalry. I mean, the Spartans own that rivalry right now, which is a very funny thing to say. I don't believe in my mind that's going to last forever. It's going to be a little bit more like basketball. Michigan's gained a few things back on the Spartans. The Spartans are still the program. What I see happening is very similar to basketball, that Harbaugh has a reach where he's going outside of the state of Michigan. But Harbaugh has still a lot to prove yet. And I'm still not convinced, despite the fact that Michigan will be ranked very highly going into the season. I think in the preseason top five, if I'm not mistaken. And some of that is based on their schedule, too, when you look at it. I'm not sure they have an extremely tough game short of Wisconsin at home until they have to go to East Lansing. In fact, that might even be their first road game. That's how ridiculously stupid their schedule is. Maybe they play at Rutgers. Okay, well, big deal. But, Harbaugh's a good coach, and he's going to figure that out pretty fast. And his team will do some good things this year. And if it doesn't win through this year because it has the tough road games, they'll get up there soon enough. But back to your original question, it's an unwritten admission that the Spartans not only are a rival, but might be on better footing than them. Harbaugh as much said that when he took over the job.
Yeah. Not only rivals, but considered a marquee game, a game they want at home.
Yeah.
On their home schedule that would draw people in.
If they hadn't in 1966 made the Spartans play there twice in a row, they wouldn't have had this little thing where the Big Ten awarded the Spartans 2 years in a row of home games.
There you go. It's all your fault, Michigan.
Yeah. yep.
All right. Name a team, DB, other than Ohio State and Michigan, in the Big Ten that really worries you.
That's on the Spartan schedule or not on the Spartan schedule?
That doesn't have to be on the Spartan schedule.
Okay. I'll give you my first choice right off the bat. I think they have a legitimate chance to, if things go their way and go well again, Iowa Hawkeyes.
Interesting.
They have their quarterback back. They have a large portion of their offense and defense back. What I saw last year was a very tough team, and they also have Michigan at home this year. And I don't know if Ohio State's on their schedule, but the Spartans do not play Iowa during the regular campaign this year. But I would say Iowa Hawkeyes are one of those teams.
Yeah, this is sort of a prove-it year for Iowa, right? They did it once. Now they got to prove that they're back.
Yeah.
And by virtue of playing in the Big Ten West, they have a virtual cakewalk to wherever they want to get to. Who else is out there? Wisconsin?
Wisconsin's kind of in a funky spot right now. They're trying to figure themselves out again. Nebraska, same way. They're the two most formidable challengers. Other than that, nobody's ready to step up and jump. Illinois, Purdue, and Indiana are not all there.
And, yeah, see, the team that I find intriguing, and I don't know whether they're actually a threat or not, but I want to see how good, and it's not just because my brother went to Penn State, but I actually want to see how good Penn State is or isn't, right? Especially with Christian Hackenberg not there. Because everyone's like, oh, he's the wrong quarterback for the James Franklin system. Now he gets to put his quarterback in there.
Yeah.
And their defense was really good last year. It's been really good the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And they keep saying that they're ready to challenge for a Big Ten title. This seems to be a bit of a put-up-or-shut-up year for James Franklin.
Well, yeah, there's some early criticism of James Franklin. And so, which I, again, find to be somewhat unfair, because it's only year two of James Franklin, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No,
so
year three.
This
will be year three.
Year three. Well, so I always still believe, though, in what you said before, unless there's some sort of major NCAA violations going on, you've got to give your coach at least 4 or 5 years a shot at it. And so, to me, there's an upward trajectory going on. Penn State had a decent season last year by, recent standards. And so, give them a chance and see what happens. You're right. This year three could be a funky one for them. I think the disadvantage for Penn State right now is just the fact that they're in the same division with Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State, and they're trying to find themselves again. And I feel like it's going to happen for them again, but is it going to happen with James Franklin or not is the question. I sort of see them as the fourth place team in the conference right now, or in the division.
Yeah, they're either the fourth-place team or the fourth program, because odds are they're going to probably beat a team you don't expect them to beat this year. And you're just hoping it's not yours.
Yeah. Because I believe, if I know the schedule correctly, I believe they have to travel to Ann Arbor. The Spartans have to play there in State College, and I think the Buckeyes also have to play in State College. So if Penn State's going to pull one off, it would probably be against Ohio State or Michigan State.
Yeah, Michigan State's historically struggled in Happy Valley.
They have, although the last couple times through there, because of Penn State's sort of ineptitude, they've been better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Better, but still struggle.
Yeah, and it's kind of like with Michigan. It's not going to last forever, so enjoy it. We enjoyed the Brady Hoke time and the Rich Rod time, but we knew those times were not going to be forever. And so the same way through here with Penn State.
Yeah, because we know Rutgers isn't going to challenge them in the Eastern.
Rutgers' only chance at a title in the Big Ten, in the Big Ten division, would be that they would have to commit all sorts of crazy recruiting violations. That's well, like that's their only hope, and then just deny the whole thing. Like that would be the only way they're going to ever probably win the Big Ten.
That's funny. Makes sense. I thought their only chance would be like if Independence Day resurgence happened, right? And like half the country got just disappeared and destroyed. And the only two schools left were Rutgers and Cal Polytechnic. Then Rutgers could actually win.
Well, you can count on this. The ratings for the college football playoff would suck.
People will be listening Nobody's to the game on their at radio. Point.
It'll be the highest rated radio broadcast ever in the history of college football.
It would be the highest rated ever Rutgers broadcast in the history of college football.
Oh, poor Rutgers. We kid because we love Rutgers.
Oh.
Rutgers is the redhead stepchild in the Big Ten. Even Maryland has some credit because they have a decent basketball program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't you get the sense that the only cred Maryland has is because Under Armour finances them? It's not because they're actually good at anything, but it's because Under Armour finances them.
Yeah, you know, the Under Armour gear is pretty good, actually. I have an Under Armour shirt myself, and I've seen their headquarters in Baltimore. It's up at Fells Point, which is like this growing area of Baltimore with a nice waterfront. And all their employees go out and do, like, they work out outside or they do yoga or whatever. And, you know,
isn't Fells Point the only livable area in Baltimore?
No, I don't think that's true. That's not true. No.
Okay.
I think, but it is one of the up and coming sort of, it would be an area that you would, might be one of the few areas you would consider going to, but it's not the only. No, I would not say that. But the Under Armour gear is cool. Anyways, I digressed off that for a minute. But, yeah, we'll see. The other team in the Big Ten, I think, and I don't know if they're ready to win yet. I always wonder about them, though. You wonder how much longer he has. It's Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern.
Yeah, you always wonder how – he's a good football coach. I mean, I think that's
he's a really
thing,
good
right?
coach. I cursed Northwestern a few years ago, Satchmo. I said on one of our podcasts about 5 years ago that they were going to win the Big Ten, that I thought that was going to be their year, and they were going to skate on through there, and they ended up missing a bowl game, I think.
DB, you didn't curse the Big Ten. Northwestern cursed itself the moment it allowed Mike Greenberg to step on campus.
Oh my goodness.
I have a feeling I'm not going to be invited on ESPN anytime soon.
And I think the Spartans have to play Northwestern this year. I think Nebraska came off the schedule, but I think the Spartans do have to make a road trip to Evanston, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know where that is in the schedule, but I think it's one of the road games.
Yeah, but why does Michigan State always struggle in Evanston?
It's a weird thing, Fashmo. I don't know. We've had some catastrophes in that stadium, and I don't know what it is. It's a house of horrors sometimes for the Spartans.
I just don't get it.
It's a weird thing. I think forever and ever, Northwestern has always gotten up to play Michigan State, even when both teams were – you know what it is? It's a little like the Red Sox-Cubs thing, and I think both teams were always sort of the bottom of the Big Ten, you know, when it was the Big Ten teams. And then the Spartans actually won a Rose Bowl, and then Northwestern was kind of looking up at the Spartans. And then Northwestern got to the Rose Bowl, and the Spartans got a little envious. And then the Spartans finally, you know, have gotten the success here. Northwestern hasn't gotten back. I think there's a little chip on the shoulder there for Northwestern.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not ready to call it a rivalry, but I know Mark Hollis wanted those games on the schedule because of all the Spartan alumni in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. Those games always scare me. Those games scare me more than going into Columbus or Ann Arbor. I mean, I get worried about those games a lot.
The three games that always worry me on the schedule, baby. There are three games that always worry me on the schedule. All right. Northwestern, Indiana, and Minnesota.
Yeah.
Not Indiana in East Lansing. Indiana and East Lansing doesn't bother me. Minnesota and East Lansing, I don't care. But when Michigan State goes to Northwestern, when Michigan State goes to Indiana, when Michigan State goes to Minnesota, I just hold my breath.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen.
It's always closer than it should be, and it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
At least they won when I went to the game in Indiana. At least Michigan State won that.
Barely. They
barely
won that game. That was in the Rose Bowl year, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they scored like a gazillion points in the second half after sleepwalking through the first half. What was hilarious about that game is the game was so close, and all the Indiana fans, and when I say all, I mean five of them, they just looked at me, and they said, "Don't worry, Michigan State will win in the second half. I guarantee it." And sure enough, Michigan State came out and crushed them in the second half. But
yeah,
it was so weird. It doesn't matter. All right. Any other Big Ten stuff before we talk briefly about Art Briles?
No, that's it for the Big Ten for now.
Okay. I've got a beef, not just with Art Briles. I have a beef with Baylor University. So as most of the people listening to this podcast know, Art Briles was fired by Baylor for you know, allowing basically a conduct, shall we say, not friendly to women to run through the football program. Lots of rape, sexual harassment going on during his tenure there. The athletic department resigned, sexual assault cases, all sorts of stuff going on. So the athletic director resigned. He quit. Briles was fired, threatened to sue the university over their thing. They reached some sort of settlement. And so Briles was gone. Although why Briles had the audacity to say he didn't deserve to be fired is beyond me. I mean, any coach in the country would have been fired for the general level of transgression that happened during his administration. I mean, here you and I are worried about like a slap between Draymond Green and Jermaine Edmonds. That's like 0.5 on a scale of 0 to 10 with what happened in Baylor being 10. And
yeah,
so you had all that stuff. But Baylor University did something interesting, Phoebe, that really pisses me off. So Baylor, like a lot of universities would do in this situation, hired an outside law firm to conduct an investigation into the university and then present the university with its findings. And so this outside law firm conducted the investigation, presented the university with its findings. The findings were damning, right? The findings said that Baylor had this culture that allowed these sorts of things to happen within the athletic department, and that the culture needed to change in the cleaning of house began.
Yeah.
But Baylor was never given a written report. Baylor was only given an oral summation of the findings. So the lawyer came in and summarized what they found. And then basically gave them an executive summary, and then Baylor acted on that. The reason that happened is Baylor didn't want a physical report. They didn't want a physical report that people could sue to try and get a hold of, or that might get leaked to the press, and people would find out just how bad things were. So they basically told the lawyers, don't give us any information, just tell it to us so we can't leak out. Indeed, that's the ultimate definition of cowardice.
Right.
Baylor knew how terrible what was going on was, knew how terrible the report was going to be, and basically said, don't give us the details. We don't want to know the details. We already know it's terrible. Just give us the summary. That way, the whole world can't find out just how bad things were here. This is the worst kind of cover-up.
Right.
The lack of outrage over this cover-up is stunning. Why don't people care more?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a funny thing, Satchmo. Is it because it's Baylor and not, you know, because people were pretty charged up about the Jameis Winston thing, right?
Yeah, Jameis Winston, the people got charged up about it. And you had all these documents on record and things like that. And that's clearly what Baylor wanted to avoid, right? But by keeping the report in the hands of the law firm and not giving the report to Baylor, it becomes, you know, attorney-client privilege, I suppose. And work product, you can't get your hands on it, and no one seems to be upset about the fact that none of this information is public, and it really should be. And I know Baylor's a private university and all of that sort of stuff, but this is a very public thing that happened. People should know what happened, and people should know what happened in the athletic department. People should know how bad it was, and people should know whether the step Baylor is taking will actually address the problem. And we don't know any of this, DB. And the fact that we're willing to roll over and just accept it for what it is really bothersome. Well, anyway, that's my rant.
No, I agree with you completely on that. A lot of stuff happened there, and clearly, I mean, you can't argue, there were some things that happened because, you know, our brow was gone. So there was some sort of culture of bad things happening. I was wondering the other day, was some of this a football decision, even more than just, were people getting upset because Baylor had that loss to Michigan State last year and then sort of faltered this year and
Here's the interesting thing, DB. The Baylor boosters tried to save Art Briles' job.
Okay.
So the Baylor boosters came in with the argument that firing him was too big a punishment. He should be suspended for a year and come back to coach next year.
Yeah.
So no, it wasn't a football decision.
And these assaults, because I sort of heard about them peripherally, and then it kind of got dumped by the wayside. And I think also too, the time of the year that it came out, it's not football season. I think it that might be some of the answer to your question. It's gotten lost a little bit. Were these things going on, from your understanding, for a long, long time, or was it just recently, or what?
No, it's been going on for a while.
Wow, okay. Well, I don't think a one-year suspension cuts it. I mean, I think the right thing was done by getting rid of him. The question, though, is why didn't this get larger attention?
Away with not releasing the report?
Well, yeah, that's pretty damning that they're allowed to just do that.
Yeah. I mean, they elected not to receive a written report so they wouldn't have to release it. That's terrible.
Very, very interesting stuff. There's got to be more to come on this.
I hope so, but their whole dodge of this, I mean, look, you have to give Baylor credit for taking the right corrective measures, right? AD gone, football coach gone, all of that sort of stuff. So it's not to say that, but, I mean, this whole dodging the report thing is just shady beyond belief.
By the way, speaking of shadiness, I just have to bring this up really quick, and we won't spend a lot of time on the subject because it's another charged issue, but did I hear correctly that Jerry Sandusky is trying to get his sentence shortened?
I don't know, but there should be no way in hell that man gets out of jail.
Yeah.
None.
Because there was some more testimony for some reason, maybe it had to do with this, where Greg Schiano and somebody else who worked at Penn State long ago, longer than what was originally stated, came out and said that the abuses were happening a long time ago, like longer than what was stated.
Yeah, so apparently what happened is, so in the insurance settlement, the insurance settlement for these cases turned up cases that went back into the 80s and into the 70s, right? And so now there are fresh allegations that more people at Penn State knew before that. But it doesn't change, you know, Sandusky's behavior. It just changes the narrative on who knew what when.
Yeah.
And, of course, Schiano and all the other assistants are saying we didn't know anything. And who knows whether they knew anything or not. But it's clear that the abuse went back to the 70s. And now the real debate is who knew what when, and not, you know, whether Sandusky's innocence or not or anything like that. So, yeah, Sandusky shouldn't be let out of jail. That's just terrible.
You know, it's a shame, Satchmo, because I feel like it just really tarnishes the history of Joe Paterno and Penn State. I mean, it's very sad, really.
It is, because now it's an open question. You know, there are allegations that say that some allegations made that Paterno knew about potential problems going back to the 70s, right? And you just don't want it to be true. And not because it's just Joe Paterno, but you don't want to believe that any human being would see that sort of thing and not come forward.
Yeah.
You just don't want to believe it. And so it is an extremely sad story. And you're at a point where it's tough to prove who knew what, when, and how. And you just hope a lot of this stuff isn't true, even though you think it might be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really quick, Michigan State basketball played the Moneyball Pro-Am in Lansing. And here is what we know about this. Tum Tum Nairn finally healthy. Yay! And looking like a real basketball player. And the full extent of his injuries from last year have come out. I mean, he started the year with plantar fasciitis. At a certain point during the year, his roommates carrying him around the apartment. He hid the injury from Tom Izzo and the coaching staff. So finally they made him say, yeah, this is what's going on. It was really bad from an injury standpoint for Tom Tom. So you have that. Apparently Miles Bridges, have you seen the video of this? His dunks and the vertical that he can do? He can jump like 5 miles in the air. It's absolutely insane.
Wow.
And then Josh Langford apparently is a great all-around basketball player. At least those are the impressions you get. It's hard to get good impressions out of, you know, this because nobody plays any defense. But you have to be pretty excited about the upcoming basketball season.
Yeah, you know, the Spartan basketball team is in another sort of spot, very similar to the football team, in that, you know, like, there's sort of a restocking went on rather than a complete overhaul. And so it's very, I'll be very curious to see what happens. It's one of those things where, not unlike the Rose Bowl season with football recently, where you sort of wonder, there's going to be lesser expectations of the basketball team this year than there were last year, and so maybe they'll have a better chance, because the Spartan basketball team always plays better when the bullseye is not on their back. It's large.
Yeah, I think so. The bullseye is not going to be on them. I think it's going to be a different team, right? Athletic, fast-breaking. You're going to see a lot of alley-oops. It's going to be a different thing on that standpoint. So I think from that standpoint, it's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully it's going to be exciting, but I'm looking forward to it. I got to admit, I think I'm actually more pumped about basketball season right now than football season. I'm excited about football season, but I'm really excited to see. I mean, Ward's a big guy that's going to eat some space. If Tum Tum can be healthy the entire season, you've got Gavin Schilling eating space. Is he going to make the next leap? Does Matt McQuaid become that sharpshooter from the outside that can really stretch the floor? I just feel like there are a lot of pieces in place for this Michigan State basketball thing. I think it's going to be exciting. They play this brutal schedule where they might lose a lot of games early. But if they come out at the other side, this could be one of those teams in March that ends up in the Final Four, even though you don't expect it. And classic Michigan State team, I'm pumped for basketball season. I can't wait.
Yep.
Yeah, it should be fun. All right, we've done 90 minutes, DB. Anything else you want to discuss before the fight song plays us out?
No, I will say in the coming weeks, a few things we can go back to. We were going to talk, we can do this on another podcast, but still some time. The O.J. Simpson 30 for 30 thing, which DB watched, and I know Sashma wants to get to that. It's very good, actually, if you haven't seen it. We'll come back and talk about that at another point. And also Draymond Green playing on the USA, Team USA basketball team, and more, of course, on this whole incident. And the other thing I think we need to spend a little time on this podcast, Sashmo, and it's not sports-related, but it's really a social problem that I think it wouldn't hurt us to spend a bit on. All these shootings, and particularly these recent spate of shootings of police officers, Sashmo, is really distressing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really distressing, and I'm actually planning on writing some stuff about it in the near future. So after I'm done writing, we can peg some of what we're talking to some of the stuff I'm publishing on.
Yeah.
So how about that? Slipped in a little old journalism stuff here. News peg.
That's what I have to say, and so I hope everyone's having a good summer. We'll come back to you in a few weeks with some more to talk about. Football season will be closer, and lots to talk about there.
All right. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.